Station log, stardate 48543.2. A team of Cardassian scientists is coming to the station to assist us in deploying a subspace relay in the Gamma Quadrant. If successful, it will allow communication through the wormhole for the first time.
I've assigned these quarters to the senior Cardassian scientist. Her name is Ulani. Her colleague, Gilora, has the adjacent room.
It's warm in here. I take it you reset the environmental controls.
I also had Chief O'Brien reprogram the replicators to provide Cardassian food.
Security measures?
I've assigned two of my people to follow the Cardassians at all times.
Fine. Have them keep their distance. I want the Cardassians to feel like guests, not prisoners.
Commander, there are still elements opposed to the peace treaty between Cardassia and Bajor on both sides. We have to be prepared for trouble.
I realize that, but while the Cardassians are here, I want the Bajorans to get used to seeing them walking on the promenade, buying from their shops, eating from their restaurants, getting to know them as something other than brutal overseers.
I just received the final update from the Cardassians on the transceiver they designed for the communications relay.
How does it look?
I'm still not convinced it's going to work.
The Cardassians seem sure that it will.
I hope they're right.
Whose quarters are these? Galora's or Ulani's?
Ulani's. And how do you know their names? I was just informed an hour ago.
Odo, please. I have a bottle of Kanar for each of them, along with a personal invitation to Quark's.
Where did you get real Kanar?
I've had three cases in my storeroom since the occupation. There hasn't been much call for it the past few years. But that's about to change.
There are only two Cardassians coming to the station. How much Kanar do you think they can drink?
There may only be two for now, but there'll be more, thanks to the peace treaty.
And as the 34th rule of acquisition states, peace is good for business.
That's the 35th rule.
Oh, you're right. What's the 34th?
War is good for business. It's easy to get them confused. The way I see it, it won't be long before there's a permanent Cardassian presence on the station. Scientists, diplomats, spies.
And they'll all be welcome at Quark's.
As long as they can pay. Rumor has it that the shop next door to mine is going out of business. I'm thinking of renting it and setting up a few Cardassian gaming concessions.
There'll be no live vole fights on the promenade, Quark.
I would never be party to anything so cruel and inhumane. But, of course, if some Cardassians happen to bring their voles along and they happen to get into a fight, I could hardly be held responsible
for... Oh, yes, you could.
And you will be.
Fine. Forget the vole fights. But I'll tell you this. Good Kanar is hard to find, and I have three cases of it. But that's just the beginning. Soon, Quark's will become known as the best place for Cardassian food and drink in this sector. I'll probably set up daily shipments from Cardassia. I may even need to buy my own transport ship.
Quark, this Kanar has gone bad.
What?
I suggest you take your bottles and leave, Quark, before I have you arrested for attempting to poison our guests.
Quark loads the tray with bottles and, looking around at Dax and Sisko for support, shrugs his shoulders and leaves. Sisko sits in his office reading a data report.
Excuse me, Commander. There's a Vedic Yarka here to see you. He says it's urgent.
Thank you for seeing me, Emissary.
What can I do for you?
I am here with a warning from the Prophets. They don't want you to let the Cardassians come aboard this station. If you do, you will bring destruction on us all.
British Sky Broadcasting presents Star Trek Deep Space Nine, based on Star Trek created by Gene Roddenberry. This episode is entitled Destiny. A huge comet rushes through space, the light of billions of stars illuminating the frozen gas it leaves in its wake. Alone in the freezing blackness of a universe littered with stars and planets, the immense space station Deep Space Nine is dwarfed by the comet as it rushes past into the depths of space. The space station comprises a column and an inner and outer tube on a flat plane. The circles are huge tubes attached to each other and the central column by large metal arms. Deep Space Nine seems almost spherical, Three semicircular arms bend vertically, equidistant apart towards the center, but do not meet. Lights flash all over the space station. The regular blinking of navigation and positioning lights maintain its visibility. Along the inner and outer circular tubes, small blocks of square lights signify the windows of crew and civilian quarters in the habitat rings. The intense light of a distant star glares off the mud-colored hull, picking out the huge features of the giant space station. The shadows created only serve to emphasize the mystery of the former Cardassian stronghold. Lights shine in military order around the upper central segment of the central core, housing the operations room atop the power center. A Federation runabout flies over Deep Space Nine, and in the distance the blackness of space shifts. Blue light bursts from a spatial phenomenon. From nothing, the swirling, circular shape of the wormhole becomes visible. As quickly as it appeared, the wormhole is gone, folding in on itself and disappearing in a flash of intense pale blue light.
Are you making some sort of threat, Vedic?
Not at all. I'm simply telling you what was foretold in the ancient texts.
Ancient texts? You mean a prophecy?
Trichor's Third. When he first encountered the Orb of Change.
I'm afraid I don't know it.
Perhaps you should make more time to study the text, child.
Are you saying that the arrival of the Cardassian scientists was foretold in a Bajoran prophecy?
Exactly. Trichor's words are clear. When the river wakes, stirred once more to Jenner's side, three vipers will return to their nest in the sky. The river has awoken, emissary.
Quial Dam was just put back into operation to divert water to the city.
Just as Trichor prophesied over 3,000 years ago. And even now, the vipers are making their way here.
And I take it you think the vipers are a reference to the Cardassian scientists?
Yes. And this station is their nest in the sky.
And how exactly is their presence here going to bring destruction on us all?
Trichor said, when the vipers try to peer through the temple gates, a sword of stars will appear in the heavens. The temple will burn and the gates will be cast open. And you must not let the Cardassians come here. You must not let them violate the celestial temple or they will destroy it. And Bajor will be cut off from the prophets forever.
Slow down. Now let me get this straight. You're saying that the vipers, the Cardassians, are going to destroy the wormhole?
Don't you see? This communications relay you hope to create is part of the prophecy. It will allow the vipers to peer through the temple gates. The wormhole, as you call it. And if they do, the temple will be destroyed.
Even if we accept that the Cardassians are the vipers, there are only two of them coming, not three. Isn't it possible that there are other mistakes in your interpretation of the prophecy as well?
There will be three vipers, you will see.
Do you understand what this communications relay could mean for Bajor? If it works, we'll be able to stay in contact with ships in the Gamma Quadrant.
It'll facilitate exploration, help us monitor Dominion activity, give us warning in case of an attack.
None of that matters. You must listen to me. I know it is difficult for you to accept because you are not Bajoran. I have studied the prophecies all my life. We are on the verge of a great disaster.
Is the Bajoran Assembly aware of this prophecy?
Yes, as is the Kai herself.
Yet they still want us to proceed with the establishment of a communications relay.
They have chosen to ignore the signs. And that is why I came to you, emissary, because I have faith in you. I know that you will do what must be done.
Vedic, I have the utmost respect for your beliefs, but I have no intention of calling this project off.
I hope that you will reconsider, emissary. My followers and I will remain on the station and pray that you change your mind.
You are free to do that, of course. Major, have Odo find out everything he can about Vedic Yarka and his followers. I don't want them making any trouble while the Cardassians are here.
Two female Cardassian scientists, smiling broadly, walk through the airlock to where Sisko and Kira are waiting to greet them.
I'm Commander Benjamin Sisko. And on behalf of the United Federation of Planets and Starfleet Command, I'd like to welcome you to Deep Space Nine.
Thank you, Commander. I'm Dr. Ulani Belor.
Gilora Rajal.
The Cardassian government wishes to express its gratitude to the Federation for agreeing to work together on this project.
It is our hope that it is the first of many such projects between our peoples.
That's a hope I can assure you we share. This is my first officer, Major Kira.
And on behalf of the Bajoran Provisional Government, I'd like to welcome you. It is our belief that this project will mark the beginning of a new era of peace for Bajor and Cardassia.
Thank you, Major.
Well, now that we've gotten the formalities out of the way, how was your trip?
Exhausting. We spent most of it rehearsing what we were going to say when we got here.
We are scientists, not diplomats.
You did very well.
Please feel free to let the Central Command know that. In the past few days, I've been contacted by gulls I haven't even heard of. All of them wanting to emphasize how important this mission is.
I know what you mean. I've gotten 3 calls from Starfleet Command just this morning.
Major Kira, I want to thank you personally for allowing us to come here.
Me?
You're the ranking Bajoran officer on this station. I'm sure we wouldn't be here if you had been opposed to working with us.
I'll work with anyone who's interested in peace.
I'm glad we already have so much in common.
Well, why don't I show you to your quarters?
Once the scientists have settled, Sisko calls a briefing and they gather before a computer graphic of the communications relay.
The signaling platform we've designed is intended to be positioned in the Gamma Quadrant at this point, 2 kilometers from the far mouth of the wormhole.
Our transceiver is being configured to fit inside it and use its existing power grid.
A similar transceiver will be put in place here on Terok No... on Deep Space Nine.
Ulani, I've looked over your design specifications. I'm not clear on what sort of carrier wave you're planning on using to cut through the interference on the inside of the wormhole.
We're planning to test various types of soliton pulses. One of them should maintain the required signal integrity.
We tried something similar about a year ago without much success.
Yes, the Bajoran government made your data available to us. I believe the problem had to do with the phase variance in your transceiver coils.
Well, I configured those coils myself. The variance was less than 0.01%.
Which, as you saw, was unacceptably high. Our new design has less than half that variance.
You don't mind if I look at the specs?
If you think it's necessary.
Commander, we'll need to make a few adjustments to the station's signaling array so that it can accommodate the type of transmissions we're planning to use.
Chief O'Brien's people can assist you with that. And when you're ready, we'll take the Defiant to the Gamma Quadrant, deploy the communications relay, and start running tests.
Excellent. Well, it's been a long day. We'd like to get some rest so we can start fresh tomorrow.
I'll have someone show you to your quarters.
Thank you, but that won't be necessary.
Thank you.
Now, those are about the 2 friendliest vipers I have ever met.
I'll explain later.
Commander, I almost forgot to tell you. Another colleague of ours, Dejar, will be arriving later today.
I'll arrange quarters.
Thank you.
So, we need to discuss what we're going to do about... What is it, Major?
There are gonna be 3 of them.
Yes.
3 vipers. Just like in the prophecy.
It turns out that Vedek Yarka is no longer Vedek at all. He was stripped of his title 2 months ago.
Why?
Officially, for teachings not in keeping with the Bajoran faith. But according to my sources, he was defrocked because he led a series of protests against the Vedic Assembly when they endorsed the peace treaty with Cardassia.
So Yarka may be using this prophecy as a way to scuttle the peace treaty.
That would seem to be his agenda. And it's probably coloring his view of the prophecy, just as your agenda colors how you see it.
I don't have an agenda, Odo. I want this project to succeed because I want the peace treaty to succeed. If I thought for a moment that there was any possibility that this communications relay could cause damage to the wormhole, I'd put a stop to it right now.
That's not the agenda I was referring to, Commander.
Oh?
I was referring to your desire to distance yourself from the title of emissary. It's just an observation, of course. But it's always seemed to me that you've never been comfortable with it.
I can't deny that. Are you suggesting that I'm dismissing this prophecy too easily because I don't want to be the emissary?
I'm not suggesting anything. But it's been my experience that all humanoids have an agenda of some sort, and that their agendas can influence them without their even realizing it.
Morn came by the infirmary this afternoon. He had an acute case of food poisoning.
Morn? I didn't think anything could make him sick.
Well, he said he had a bad glass of canard at Quark's.
He should ask for a refund.
Apparently, it was on the house.
Major, may I have a word with you?
I'll see you later.
What can I do for you, Vedic?
Have you been able to convince the emissary to reconsider his decision?
I haven't tried, and I'm not planning to.
But you must. If not, the Celestial Temple will be destroyed.
I'm not convinced that's going to happen.
Don't you believe in the prophecies?
Yes.
And don't you believe that Commander Sisko is the emissary?
Vedic, you have to understand my position here. Commander Sisko is my superior officer. I have to deal with him on that basis first.
So you do believe he is the emissary? You just don't want him to know that. I understand. You want him to know that he can count on you as an officer under his command. You want to keep your work and your faith separate.
Yes, and for 3 years now, I have.
I'm afraid that's no longer possible. The prophets have chosen you to help the emissary make this decision. A decision that has profound implications for all of Bajor. You must convince him to make the Cardassians leave before the Sword of Stars appears.
Vedic, if you're asking me
to... It is not I who is asking, it is the prophets. If you turn your back on them now, you're abandoning your faith. And without your faith, Nerys, what do you have left?
Kira, unable to look at him any longer, drops her eyes, and he walks away. Ulani, Galora, Dax, and O'Brien sit at a table in Quark's bar.
I prefer the serialist poets from the First Republic. Like Eloja of Prim. He's easily my favorite Cardassian writer.
It is so rare to meet a non-Cardassian who appreciates our literature.
I took an interest because I had the chance to meet Eloja.
You knew him?
One of my previous hosts, Tobin, met him while he was in exile on Vulcan. As I recall, he had quite a temper.
Really?
I believe this is the party you're looking for.
Dejar.
May I introduce Jedzia Dax and Miles O'Brien, our colleague Dejar.
We weren't expecting you so soon.
I was able to arrange special transportation.
I'm sure you were.
I took the liberty of preparing a few of our special Cardassian delicacies.
Tojal in yummock sauce.
Rugova eggs.
All fresh, not replicated.
Well, enjoy.
Is something wrong?
It's just... I don't really care for Cardassian cuisine.
We try to avoid it whenever possible.
Fortunately, those of us in the Science Ministry are provided with a wide variety of off-world foods.
Yes, we're actually quite spoiled. Some of us even think of ourselves as better than the average Cardassian.
Ulani and Galora stare angrily back at Dejar. In the operations room, Miles pulls a service hatch open for Galora.
The main switching relays are in here. I think we should hook your transceiver to the ODN interface through the,
What happened to these couplings?
What? Oh, I made some modifications.
Well, these relays don't have nearly as much carrying capacity as before. They won't be able to handle the signal load from the transceiver.
Well, in order to bring the system up to Starfleet code, I had to take out the couplings to make room for a secondary backup.
Starfleet code requires a second backup?
In case the first one fails.
What are the chances that both a primary system and its backup would fail at the same time?
Well, it's very unlikely, but in a crunch, I wouldn't like to be caught without a second backup.
Well, what's done is done. I'll try to figure out what we should do next.
Well, I think our best bet would be to go...
Please, just give me a moment to think.
Fine. I'll just sit here quietly.
Huh. In that case, could you give me a cup of red leaf tea?
O'Brien's head turns slowly, his affronted eyes trained on her back.
Why not?
He jumps up and mounts the stairs, stomping away to the nearest replicator.
We
We've loaded the communications relay into the Defiant's cargo bay.
Good. How are Chief O'Brien and Galora coming along?
They run into some kind of problem, but the chief says the transceiver should be online in about 4 hours.
We won't be ready much before that anyway.
We've received clearance from Ops, Commander.
Release docking clamps and set a course for the wormhole.
Flashing open in the Gamma Quadrant, the wormhole closes just as the Defiant exits and moves slowly away.
Full scan.
No sign of Dominion activity. No other ships in the area.
All right. Take us into position. Stand by to deploy the relay.
Wait a minute.
What is it?
Running a large mass of ice and ionized gas, entering sensor range, bearing 215 Mark III. It looks like a rogue comet.
Let's have a look. Put it on screen.
They stare in wonder at the huge ball of rock trailing a long tail of frozen gas in its wake.
It's beautiful. Its core contains unusually high concentrations of silithium. That's why its tail is so bright.
The sort of stars.
Sisko turns and stares at her as he realizes what she has said.
That's a very colorful way to describe a comet, Major.
It's just a figure of speech.
Dejar and Dulani turn back to their consoles.
Well, your sword of stars is going to pass very near the wormhole, but not close enough to interfere with our plans.
We're in position, Benjamin.
Begin a final systems check on the relay station. I want to deploy it within the hour.
Slowly, Sisko gets up and crosses to Kira. Standing beside her, he bends down as if watching her work.
Major, can I have a word with you? Sword of Stars.
Certainly look like that to me.
That's open to debate. But what is not debatable is that this prophecy has no place on the Bridge of the Defiant, especially in front of the Cardassians. At the moment, they are not even aware of it, and I want to keep it that way.
You're right. It won't happen again. Huh.
I take it, Major, that you believe the prophecy is coming true.
Yes, I do.
So you think I should call this mission off?
Look at what's happened already. The river has returned to Janir, the three vipers, now the Sword of Stars. Each of them predicted by Trikor's prophecy. And then there's you. The emissary. You're here. You have a decision to make, just like in the prophecy.
Do you really believe that I'm the emissary?
I guess I always have. I never wanted to admit it to myself. It's hard to work for someone who's a religious icon.
I hope I don't offend your beliefs. But I don't see myself as an icon, religious or otherwise. I'm a Starfleet officer, and I have a mission to accomplish. If I call it off, it has to be for some concrete reason, something solid, something Starfleet.
All right, how about this? The prophets, the aliens who live in the wormhole, as you call them, exist outside of linear time. They know the past, present, and future.
Agreed.
It seems perfectly reasonable that they could have communicated their knowledge of the future to a Bajoran named Trikor. He wrote down that knowledge in the form of a prophecy. And now, 3,000 years later, we are seeing those events unfold. To me, that reasoning sounds concrete, solid. I'd even call it Starfleet.
But that all hinges on how you interpret an ancient text that's been translated and retranslated over the centuries. Words that were couched in metaphor to begin with. I'm sorry, Major, but where you see a Sword of Stars, I see a comet. Where you see vipers, I see three scientists. And where you see the emissary, I see a Starfleet officer.
Dax to Sisko.
Go ahead.
We're ready to deploy the relay.
On my way.
Kira nods quickly in Starfleet agreement and Sisko leaves. O'Brien stands a little way behind Galora, watching her sullenly as she works on a power relay.
All right, now we just have to shunt the ODN line through the secondary field coils.
We can't do that.
Why not?
Because those coils aren't configured to handle ODN output.
Why not? Did you modify them too?
Actually, I replaced them. They were always shorting out on us. Frankly, I don't see how the station kept running during the occupation.
Why didn't you tell me you replaced the secondary field coils?
If you had told me what you were planning to do, I would have.
I don't have time to explain everything.
What? You think I won't be able to understand?
It has been my experience that it...
What? That humans aren't good engineers?
No, not humans. Males.
I beg your pardon?
Men just don't seem to have a head for this sort of thing. That's why women dominate the sciences.
Well, maybe on Cardassia. But on this station, this man is chief of operations. And I know more about these systems than anyone, including you. I think I know what the problem is. So if you want to get that transceiver online, hand me the laser torch and give me some room.
Galora's aggression slowly fades and she hands O'Brien the laser torch. Standing away from the transceiver, she moves behind him as he steps forward. An almost tender look flickers in her eyes as she watches him. The signal relay has been deployed beside the Defiant, its satellite dish held vertical between three stabilizer arms.
Are we ready on this end?
Almost. I'm just about to activate the relay's transmission array. Dejar?
Standing by.
I'm receiving the relay's test signal.
Target the signaling array toward the wormhole and initiate a carrier wave in the delta band frequency.
Initiating carrier wave.
If they receive it on the station, they'll send an acknowledging signal in the same frequency.
I'm not receiving anything.
Then we have to assume it didn't work. Let's try the theta band frequency.
Initiating carrier wave. Something's wrong. I'm picking up a neutrino surge from the wormhole.
Report!
Somehow the carrier wave caused the wormhole to open. The wormhole's gravity well has increased by a factor of 3.
Terminate the carrier wave and maintain our position.
Gravimetric fields have returned to normal.
What happened?
I'm not sure. The carrier wave shouldn't have affected the wormhole at all.
Was there any damage to the relay?
None. I'm still receiving the test signal.
Benjamin, the gravitational surge altered the course of the comet. It's now heading directly toward the wormhole.
If the comet enters the wormhole, the silithium in its core will cause a cascade reaction
and collapse the wormhole permanently.
Commander's log, supplemental. With less than 5 hours before the comet reaches the wormhole, I brought the Defiant back to the station and convened a meeting of the entire science team.
Apparently, the carrier wave we sent created some sort of subspace inversion inside the wormhole.
That's what caused the gravity well to form.
The possibility of subspace inversion was predicted in one of our computer models.
Well, that wasn't included in the data you sent us.
The probability of such an occurrence was less than 2%, well within safety limits. We saw no reason to include it in the data we sent you.
It would seem that our scientific methodologies differ slightly. It is our practice to examine all possibilities, no matter how unlikely, before we proceed with field tests.
We would, of course, prefer to operate that way as well. However, since the science ministry falls under the jurisdiction of the military, we have to follow certain rules. One of them is not to make any project look unnecessarily dangerous.
We'll keep that in mind when we resume work on the communications relay.
That is an extremely unlikely possibility, Commander. The Science Ministry will undoubtedly wish to assemble a new team before proceeding further.
That is, of course, an internal Cardassian matter. Chief, Dax feels we can't risk using tractor beams to deflect the comet.
It would probably break into smaller pieces and we'd have a bigger mess on our hands.
The same thing would happen if you tried to destroy it with a phaser beam.
Not necessarily. I could modify the Defiant's phaser array to generate a beam wide enough to encompass the entire comet.
Vaporizing it evenly so it won't break up.
How long would the modifications take?
3 hours.
Get on it. We'll be cutting this one pretty close.
In the cramped confines of an access tube on the Defiant, Galora kneels beside O'Brien as he works, unable to take her eyes off him.
I've accessed the Defiant's primary phaser relay. I'm going to try shunting it through the warp drive.
Won't that overload the relay?
Well, not if we bypass the plasma emitter.
I hadn't thought of that.
The emitter coupling is over there.
Galora stays still, watching him, pouting, before bowing her head and moving out of the way. Unsure of her change in attitude, O'Brien shakes his head and crawls down the tube. As he passes her, Galora's eyes drift down to his buttocks and she follows. Crawling up close to him, she watches his hands and face, concentrated on the work at hand.
What are you doing now?
I'm decoupling the servos so they don't lock up.
She snuggles closer to him and slides her arm under his shoulder. She runs her other hand under his fingers and places his hand on her arm, her eyelids fluttering seductively.
You have very steady hands.
Oh. Well, they get the job done, I guess. And right now, the most important job is bypassing the plasma emitter.
He withdraws his hand and goes back to work. Galora looks perturbed and a little hurt as she gathers her courage.
I assure you, I'm quite fertile. I could provide you with many healthy children, if that's your concern, but quite frankly, I think you're getting a little ahead of yourself.
Children? What are you talking about? I already have a child and a wife.
You're married?
Yes, happily.
Then why have you been leading me to believe that you wanted me?
I haven't. All we've done since we've met is argue.
I took your overt irritability toward me as a signal that you wished to pursue some physical relationship.
Of course. Well, that's how Cardassians do things.
Oh, my. I'm afraid this is a case of cross-cultural misunderstanding.
I think so. Oh. I'm not remotely interested in you. But that's not what I meant. No, you are very attractive, and I'm flattered, of course.
Please, Mr. O'Brien, there's no need to continue. You've made your feelings clear.
Galora, we have to finish this.
I'm sure you can complete the job on your own.
Chief O'Brien said the modification to the Defiant's phasers would be ready within half an hour.
Half an hour ahead of schedule, hmm?
The chief's a born engineer. He always gives himself a comfortable margin with his repair estimates.
He nods, but his mind is elsewhere, concentrating on the data screen in front of him.
Let me guess. You're reading up on Bajoran prophecies concerning the emissary.
There are hundreds of them.
Most of them are vague. Some are contradictory. But just enough truth in a few of them to make me wonder.
You mean some of them have come true?
If you interpret them in a certain way, yes.
So now you're wondering if Trecor's prophecy is going to come true as well.
I have to admit it's getting harder to ignore.
But Benjamin, there's every reason to believe we'll be able to destroy the comet.
I know. But I'm becoming more and more concerned that if I don't send the Cardassians home, something else will go wrong.
The gates of heaven will burn and be cast open. Let me ask you something. If you never heard Trecor's prophecy, what would you do?
I'd continue working on the communications relay.
It seems to me you have a choice. You can either make your own decisions, or you can let these prophecies make them for you.
As soon as the Defiant is ready, have the Cardassians meet us on board.
Yes, sir.
Bursting open in a swirl of intense blue light, the wormhole closes again behind the Defiant as it takes up position in the Gamma Quadrant.
The comet is directly ahead, distance 200 kilometers.
Bring us to within 10 kilometers. Chief, are your phaser modifications online?
Aye, sir. Phasers are locked on target.
The comet looms ahead of them, a halo of illuminated gas surrounding it.
Holding position at 10 kilometers.
Shields up. Go to red alert. Fire!
The comet glows orange under the onslaught and explodes. Sparks ignite on the bridge.
What the hell happened?
I don't know, sir. The entire weapons relay just blew. All defensive systems are down.
Benjamin, the sensors show that the modified phasers never came online. We fired a standard burst and it shattered the comet instead of vaporizing it.
There's no way they should have misfired like that. I modified the systems myself.
Commander, the three fragments are still on course for the wormhole.
How soon before they reach the entrance?
26 minutes.
Without weapons, we have no way of stopping them.
The main emitter coupling has been depolarized. I must have accidentally inverted the power flow when I tried to modify the phaser array. I can't believe it. A first-year engineering student wouldn't make a mistake like that.
This wasn't your fault, Mr. O'Brien. And it wasn't an accident.
Galora.
Dejar is a member of the Obsidian Order. She was assigned to our team for security reasons. I believe she sabotaged this coupling.
The Order has always been opposed to the peace treaty with Bajor. They sent you here to sabotage the relay. Because if the first joint venture between Cardassia and Bajor was a failure, it would probably be the last.
This is all speculation, Commander. You have no proof.
If it was sabotage, a DNA scan on the coupling should reveal who's responsible.
Take her to quarters and detain her there. Now that the comet's been fractured into smaller pieces, can we use the tractor beams to deflect them?
They just disintegrate further, releasing more silithium.
If we can't stop the fragments, is there any way that we can prevent the silithium from interacting with the wormhole?
Maybe if we could contain it somehow.
If you could generate a subspace field around the fragment, that might contain the silithium.
The warp drive. It could create a subspace bubble around the ship.
But we'd have to maneuver the Defiant between the fragments. They're too close together. There's not enough room.
A shuttle pod could maneuver between them. And its warp drive should be able to create a large enough subspace field.
Maybe. But it could overload the engines.
That's the chance I'll have to take. Major, you have the bridge. I want you to take the Defiant back into the Alpha Quadrant as soon as I've cleared the shuttle bay.
Commander. I want to go with you. Not just because I'm your first officer, but because I believe I'm here to help the Emissary.
Dax, the bridge is yours. We've cleared the shuttle bay. Signal the Defiant that they can leave.
They're heading for the wormhole.
I'm going to take us in behind the comet fragments. It'll be easier to maneuver into position.
Sisko directs the shuttle around the largest fragment and takes up a position directly between the three parts. The wormhole bursts open in the Alpha Quadrant and the Defiant flies out towards Deep Space Nine, its engines slow as it turns to face the wormhole entrance, which has closed once more.
Hold position here. They could be in for a rough ride. Stand by transporters in case we need to beam them off the shuttle pod when they clear the wormhole.
We're in position. Activate the subspace field.
Field engaged.
A flash of blue light spreads from the pod surrounding the fragments in a protective shield.
We'll reach the entrance to the wormhole in 5 seconds.
Kira looks nervously at Sisko as the wormhole flashes open in front of them. Carefully guiding the shuttle through, the shield begins to flash as the fragments and shuttle are buffeted around inside the wormhole.
The subspace field is losing integrity. Some of the silithium is starting to leak through.
Divert power from the engines to the subspace field coils. We'll let our own inertia carry us the rest of the way.
That helped. We're still losing silithium.
I'm picking up a neutrino surge. Something's coming through.
The three fragments blast into the Alpha Quadrant. Sisko deactivates the shield and speeds away from them, heaving a huge sigh of relief.
Dax to Sisko.
Sisko here.
Are you all right, Benjamin?
There was some silithium leakage inside the wormhole, but we're fine.
I don't believe it.
What is it, Chief?
I'm picking up the test signal from the communications relay.
How is that possible?
I'm not sure. We're reading a subspace filament leading back through the wormhole. It's acting like some kind of carrier wave.
The comet fragments. They must have left a silithium trail in the wormhole.
It's almost like the wormhole was wedged open just a crack. Just enough to let subspace signals through.
The prophecy came true. All of it. We just misinterpreted Dracor's words. The three vipers. He wasn't talking about the Cardassians. He meant the three comet fragments.
The communications relay. In a sense, we've been trying to peer through the temple gates.
Silithium ignited the wormhole, burning the temple gates.
So that they never close again.
And it's all because the emissary used the Sword of Stars.
And Dracor saw it all. 3,000 years ago.
O'Brien walks with Galora along the promenade towards an airlock.
I just want to say that I appreciate what you did on the Defiant. I hope it doesn't cause you too much trouble when you get back to Cardassia.
My superiors in the Science Ministry will protect me. Frankly, I think Dajar is in much more trouble than I. The Order doesn't reward failure.
Still, it was a brave thing to do.
I didn't want you to take the blame for something that wasn't your fault. I know how proud you are of your work.
Too proud sometimes. It's gotten me into trouble now and again.
What's your wife's name?
Keiko.
A lucky woman.
Galora leans towards him and kisses him gently on the cheek before turning and walking into the airlock to her shuttle. O'Brien watches her in stunned silence before turning thoughtfully away as Sisko and the Vedek descend to the promenade deck.
Emissary, I'm sorry I doubted you. I realize now I let my distrust of the Cardassians blind me to the Prophet's words.
It seems that the Prophets want peace between your two peoples after all.
Perhaps so. There are signs that Trekor's fourth prophecy will soon come to pass as well.
Don't tell me that has something to do with me.
You, Commander? Well, it is a prophecy about the emissary.
Tell me about it.
Trekor's fourth prophecy says that the emissary will face a fiery trial, and he'll be forced to choose.
The End, voiced by Marston York for British Sky Broadcasting.